Welcome to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast with your host, Dr. Yoni Rosenblatt. Today, we embark on a dynamic conversation with special guest Ryan Ripkin, exploring the intersection of rehabilitation and entrepreneurship. As someone who has dealt with the intricacies of recovery while also exploring entrepreneurial ventures, Ryan provides valuable insights for athletes, healthcare professionals, and aspiring entrepreneurs alike. Whether you're interested in the rehabilitation process for athletes, the entrepreneurial mindset, or the delicate balance between the two, this episode promises a rich exploration of the challenges and successes that come with wearing multiple hats in the world of sports and healthcare. Tune in for an engaging discussion on rehab and entrepreneurship with Ryan Ripkin. Let's jump right in.
Hey guys, this conversation that you're about to hear with Ryan Ripkin was a great one. I loved my time with him. He did an awesome job of applying all the lessons that he's learned, both from minor league baseball. He was in the Nats organization, as well as in the Orioles organization, and has now started his own media company. So his experience in the entrepreneurial world is so applicable to what it is we do as sports physical therapists. Whether you're in private practice or not, he talks about how to relate to patients, how to relate to referral sources, ways to craft your message depending upon who it is you're speaking to. I think there's a lot of gold here. So I'm really excited for you guys to listen to my conversation with Ryan Ripkin. He even talks about some of the lessons that his very famous father taught him. So without further ado, here is Ryan Ripkin. Ryan Ripkin, welcome to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast. Really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I feel like, you know, this is something in the works for a while just because of all of our mutual connections. So I'm really happy to be joining you today.
Yeah, and you have some awesome things going on. So you have your own media company. You have a separate podcast. You work some sideline coverage and you're constantly doing pregame work for the Orioles. Kind of round that out and tell us exactly what you're up to today.
Well, yeah, that's it is kind of a loaded question, right? Because I'm trying to put my hand in different jars, right? You know, I want to see, you know, what's going to be a possibility. And I'm interested in a lot of things. And I've been fortunate enough. I do, like you said, radio and TV work covering the Baltimore Orioles. I'll do that again this year. And in the process, I now have started my own media company because you're in a day and age now where you can work on things independently. And I've been able to start that and grow. And really now it's in the first year and there's so many ups and downs with it. But I've learned a lot and the growth has been tremendous. So I feel like, honestly, if I look at it right now, I'm doing probably four jobs. And on top of that, too, I like to still give back with the youth. So I do lessons at the baseball warehouse here in Maryland. So, you know, I don't know if that's the long-term plan, but for right now, this is all that I'm doing.
Okay. So I wanted to start with really a softball, if you will, and you carry a very important name in Baltimore sports folklore. So just tell me what the number 2,632 means to you.
Well, it's a very specific number, right? And especially, you're right, people in Baltimore would know that number. People in Maryland, obviously, there's a lot of pride here. But in general, people in baseball understands what that number looks like. For me, though, it doesn't mean a record, you know, and that's what 2,632 games is. I know you're talking about with my dad and the streak of playing that many consecutive games. But for me, it's about consistency, being persistent, and trying to continuously, you know, go out there and perform even when there are days where you don't feel like it. So for me, it's the number embodies so many of those, I guess you can call them qualities. But for me, that was a standard of you go to work and you try to put yourself in the best position, even if on days you might not feel the best, you still got to go out there and show up.
Yeah, and it's an awesome lesson, which I'm sure is not lost on you, that while your dad played professional baseball for 2,632 games in a row, which is far and away the record, the ability to apply that lesson to your everyday and to your entrepreneurial path and journey seems like it certainly resonates. I definitely know in my career, not to compare myself to Cal Ripken, although I did that on occasion as I was growing up, like every kid about my age in Baltimore, is you got to bring your best even when you're not at your best. And that's something I definitely learned from watching your father from afar. How do you apply that in your day-to-day now that you're no longer a professional baseball player?
Well, you know, it's funny you're bringing that up. And even as a kid, you know, that was something, if I was ever, you know, banged up, hurt, you know, and maybe it was to the point where I just didn't feel good, but I know I could play. But sometimes you have that thought in your head of, wow, I'm in pain or something's wrong. And I remember even just having a conversation of, well, can you do it? Can you play?
Yeah.
And honestly, nowadays I'm not condoning for everyone. If you're really hurt and it could really jeopardize your, you know, your long-term ability, that's not what I'm saying. But it was on those moments where my dad knew, hey, I was banged up, but I was okay. It was just, how could you push through it? How could you push through when you feel uncomfortable is really what it's all about. And how it's now, how I, you know, use that to what I'm doing in life outside of professional sports or sports in general is, on the days where things are a little bit tougher, or maybe I feel uncomfortable with a situation, whether it's, you know, trying to put myself out there, trying to have a trial and error period of what works, what doesn't work, pushing through that uncomfortable feeling, because that's something where for everything, I think this is a part with in the athletic world, or if we're training in general, people don't want to push past a certain point because it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. But it's uncomfortable.
But usually when you get past that point, you find out a lot about yourself and you realize that you are capable of much more, but you must be willing to put yourself out there even in those moments. So that's what I take away of, you know, continue to work. And on the days where you really are not, or you're doubting yourself on it, those are the days, honestly, where I figured out the most and I've had the most value. And in some cases you look back and go, man, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have gotten to the next level of where I want to go.
Yeah. And I, you know, I've come a long way on this. I used to think and really preach that within true sports, there are no bad days. And I've really come around on that where it's not that there are no bad days. It's just that you're going to continue to perform even when there are bad days. So acknowledging that it's a bad day, maybe you're a little hoarse, maybe you're sick, whatever it is, but you're going to show up and give it your all. And acknowledge that, hey, I'm not at my best, but I'm going to still give it my best. I think that goes a long way. Walk me through, because we talked a little bit about your media company and all the amazing things you got going on with your new endeavors. Give me your past as a professional baseball player and some of the hurdles you had to jump over to continue that.
Yeah. So to go back and see if I can, you know, recall some memories and the timeline of it. Right. So been around baseball my entire life. You know, my dad, my uncle, my grandfather ball played. My dad and my uncle played in the major leagues. My grandfather coached. So I had a familiarity. And then as a kid, then you want to play baseball. Now I love playing other sports. Basketball, honestly, if I was 6'8", I might have not ended up going to play baseball just because I love playing basketball so much. But I could never put down the glove for baseball, at least of the opportunities. And I always thought that there'd be a chance and people I talked to about playing professionally. And that's kind of started in high school and going to play in high school, go to showcases or play against some of the best in the country, and you can match up and see where you are. So I felt that was where it started. Went to South Carolina to start my career. And actually South Carolina was coming off of a lot of success, going to the College World Series, winning. And then I think the year before they lost in the final. But then a coaching change happened and I ended up only lasting a year. I sat out and redshirted and I went to junior college in Florida. Went there for 1 year. I was going to go to Wake Forest. That's where I was going to continue my career. But in the process, was drafted and decided to sign with the Washington Nationals in 2014. And unfortunately, about 2 weeks into my playing professional career, I guess I should say professional career, I have an ankle injury. It's pouring down rain, hurt my ankle. So injure it there. Next year, I re-injure the same ankle in spring training. And all of a sudden, the first year plus of my professional career is injury plagued. Yeah. And ended up being healthy, but maybe we could talk about it. I never fully trusted my ankle in 2016. Now, I had a lot of personal things going on, and I flat out stunk. I didn't play well, couldn't hit the ball. 2017, released from the Nationals, picked up from the Orioles, and I had a reset moment. Was able to put some things together and ultimately played another 4 or 5 seasons. My last year being in 2021, getting up to AAA in Norfolk, which is the Orioles AAA team. So then made the decision to retire, but But yeah, it really was. I know trying to follow the dots, there was a lot of moments in there and a lot of adversity to try to get to where I ended up finishing.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dig into that ankle, because I'm always fascinated as to what it looks like to rehab a given injury at various levels of sport. I work a ton with NFL guys, and it just opens my eyes to how, let's say, checkered it can be rehabbing an injury, even at the highest level. Sometimes you're not getting the highest levels of care. I've heard all the fairy tales of playing minor league baseball, where it is super nomadic and it is unbelievably poverty stricken, and you are just barnstorming throughout the country, doing your best to keep that jersey on your back. Tell me what it was like rehabbing where you were in the Nationals organization back from this ankle. Yeah.
Yeah. It was initially, and this was the part, and this is the competitor of saying, push through, you're fine. So it was pouring down rain and I was trying to round second base and I misstepped and my ankle just gave out and turned. But initially when that happens for an ankle injury, if you roll it, the initial shock, you might not feel as much, right? It's usually after the fact, as you know, that things are going to swell up a little bit more. You're going to feel it. In that case, I was like, I want to stay in. I'm good. And the trainer took me out and I still said, I'm good. I'll be able to play tomorrow. And within 30 minutes, that thing blew up so black and blue. And then I could not walk. And we got the MRI. It was a grade 3 sprain. So there was a tear in the ligament on the outside. And so I did it, rehabbed without surgery. Now I was maybe more naive to the sense the first time around, where you go through the rehab and luckily, since I was in Florida, they're going to give you more attention when you're down there. But each organization has more people that they have maybe specifically focused on injuries, but that's not the case with every organization. They've gotten better at that, so I can't speak on it as much then, but or now, but then that's what it was. Now, flash forward to the following year, and I never got surgery. And I think that was the one part where there was a miscommunication, because when I was in a spring training game and I took a secondary league. So for those that don't know, it's just balls coming through the hitting zone or home plate. And on base, you're trying to take a lead to have you in a position if the ball's hit to react. And as I was taking my shuffle and I was coming down for the secondary lead, my ankle just gave out.
Again.
And it gave out again. And that one hurt. Oh, my goodness. That, to me, might have been the singular most painful experience I had had. And then got surgery. And they said it should have been, talking to their doctor, they said it should have been repaired. And I actually had my surgery. He recommended to the Nationals that I just rehab in Baltimore with a PT that specifically would work with me on a day-to-day basis. And I'll tell you what, I think the timeline that was initially given that the Nationals thought I would come back was expedited, because I got to be in a place that's solely focused on physical therapy in Baltimore. And again, that's no knock to it, but when you're hearing about these stories, there's a lot of players. And again, it has gotten way better now. And the Orioles actually have done a great job with what they've had down in Sarasota. In there, that's where they do their rehab facility. But at that time, I don't know if I would have come back as quickly as I did had it not been for the structure of having someone solely focus on getting my ankle back to being where I needed it to be.
Yeah, and that initial injury on that first rainy day, walk me through the rehab process immediately following that. So you're working with a Nats guy. It's not outside the organization. It's inside the organization. No one mentioned, hey, maybe you should look outside the organization.
Correct.
What was that rehab like? Were you in every day? Were you doing different exercise every day? Were you seeing the same therapist? Was it a therapist? Was it a trainer? Give me real nuts and bolts of what that looked like.
Yeah, so we didn't have a physical therapist for the first injury.
That is insane. That's crazy. Yeah.
We had a coordinator, and so his job then, and in their eyes, his job is as the medical coordinator down there. He is supposed to take care of then all the injured players. Like, so his job was specifically to the injured players. He just didn't. There was no set PT on site, so to speak. Right. So I had a lot of time I'd work with him, and there would be, you know, this was daily for me. I was in there every single day. So like I said, it was beneficial to me, you know, that I at least had someone where I could go in each and every day, but also because of his position, he was going to have to work with other players, which multiple. Completely understood. And that's where sometimes the timing of it can be harder. But I will say for me, I had a schedule. I had the exercises, whether it was from balancing initially towel work, right? You can only have certain range of motion to eventually progressing to more balancing board work, more stability work. I felt really good about all of it, actually. And for me, maybe that's the perfectionist in me. I would really push my boundaries quite a bit just from growing up that way. So the only thing for me, though, that it was so strange then that doing all of that and feeling that you're 100% and then your ankle just being in a weird position the next year, where actually when I heard it in spring training, it was a gloomy day. The field was very muddy and my cleat, I feel like kind of caught, but it wasn't anything out of the norm. But my ankle just completely gave out. And that was probably the most shocking part of it all. And they even commented on it later saying this was possible to happen again. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I kind of wish I knew that information at the time.
True Sports Physical Therapy is growing like wildfire. We have 14 locations, soon to be more. We are throughout the state of Maryland. We're in Pennsylvania, in Lebanon, in York, Pennsylvania, as well as in Delaware, in Newark and Wilmington, Delaware. Like I said, so many more practices to come, and we always need outstanding sports physical therapists. Our treatment style is unique. We are one-on-one with your athlete for 45 minutes every single session. You do the entire treatment. You do the entire evaluation, and they are in state-of-the-art facilities where you have room to run, throw, and jump and really get your athlete all the way back to on the field and better and stronger than they were. We also have outstanding salaries, comp structures, bonus abilities, 401ks, as well as a very strong continuing education offering, including in-house continuing education. And we're looking for you. Now is the time, as we are growing like crazy, just shoot your resume over to Yoni, Y-O-N-I, at True Sports PT, or shoot us a DM and we will hit you back. We will get you in for our unique, tried and true interview process and really make a determination that this is the right place for you to grow your career and get your athletes better than ever. We can't wait to hear from you. And so what was your return to sport process? Because you did a good job describing the early on stuff where it's towels and then you move to the board and it's balance. Did that blend into you have to pass this test to show that that ankle is ready? And if so, what was that test?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was the progression after I got to the balancing. Then it was when I could start to jog, and then when it could be running in a straight line, and then it was running on a curve. We'd go from we didn't even run on the actual diamond. We ran on the cutout of the infield diamond, where just to get used to that kind of turning radius.
Yep.
And I think if I remember correctly, we did cone work, you know, shuffling. That was kind of the next step after that. And I think probably that was towards the end of the process. So that was at probably the 8-week mark for me, or six week mark. I think I was back starting to run eight weeks, doing more of the cutting. And then, so if I injured it in July, we had instructional league in mid September. So by mid September, I was back doing full activity, so to speak.
Then did you have a Ryan Ripken specific strength program where, okay, we know he has this ankle thing, so we know we have to do this from a prehab standpoint. We got to keep his ankle strong. We know these are the movements that we have to keep him doing where it becomes more performance based. Or did you just shuffle into, okay, now I'm back with the team, forget the ankle, I'm just doing the team lift?
Yeah, I think there was always going to be the parameters of whatnot, but I wouldn't say there was a program to say what Ryan could or couldn't do. It was make sure I'm still doing my, you know, prehab before I go out to practice.
Yep.
But it kind of then would end there. Then after that, it was how would you feel? And And then how you felt kind of dictated what I ended up doing. Now, I never overloaded much during the playing period because we only had, it was a 3.5 week instructional league. For those that don't know, you go down there, you're just getting instruction, you'll play against some other teams or you'll scrimmage, but it really is a lot of practicing. So after that was done and then I could get into my off-season workouts or lifts, that's when it could be a little bit more specific. And actually at the time I worked with a guy that used to train and work with, you know, Michael Phelps and swimmers. So I was, at least when I got to him, focusing on getting that ankle back to full strength. But I think the biggest part here, where again, it's not that I blame anybody for anything, but not knowing that I needed surgery all along was probably the one part where there was a false security of how I felt with the ankle. And the second time I got hurt, it was like kind of like the, oh crap, you know, what happened? And then hearing the more conversation was, well, this thing has a long way to go that I really wasn't expecting.
Yeah. And by the way, just knowing your lineage and that you are a Ripken, you are the last dude I would ask. So how do you feel? Do you feel ready to play? Like, of course you're going to say yes, ready to play. And that's why I asked this next question, which is, did you do anything on force plates or anything objective to say this ankle is this percent strong compared to his healthy ankle or compared to another 6'3" first baseman?
Yeah, you know, I think it was kind of almost a measuring of just, it would be my evaluation on it, and we try to use the measuring. But you're right, there wasn't, and to your point, I would want to go out there and play as much as I can. Now, they would make me prove to them if I could pass the test, prove that I could do it. And I used an ankle brace when I came back initially, obviously. And, you know, that also gives you a false sense of the security as well. And sometimes you become really dependent on that over time. But I think you're right. I'm never going to be a person that is going to sit there and go, well, nope, I can't do it. You know, but I will always, I never felt, I'll say this, when I came back, I had 100% faith that I could go out and do what I could do, no problem, you know, but again, it was just a false security of how much maybe damage I kind of did to it initially.
Yep.
And maybe there could have been some other things that I could have done more in the off season. Now that, because I will say in the off season after it, I felt really good. Then you kind of forget about it, but you also got to remind yourself, you know, it's, the process isn't over.
Yeah. And I see a few things here. One, in hearing that story, one is you said the Nats have probably come a long way on this, and definitely the Orioles have. I know they've made big strides down in Sarasota and with their entire team, especially with the new regime that came in a couple of years ago with Elias, where they're getting a little bit smarter about this. Do you see this conflict of interest that I see where a trainer, a therapist, a strength coach, whatever it is, who's evaluating these players, they answer to the team, right? So is the player's best interest always at heart? I don't know. Can you speak to that?
You know, I think what I wish could be more, and I think this is where teams are going. You know, like I said, I haven't been back in the Nationals organization. And by the way, like with all this, it's no knock with anything with the Nationals as far as, you know, how great of a relationship, how much they wanted to help, all of this, right? Like they were, I still have a lot of great bonds there. But looking at it objectively, this is just with professional sports in general. This isn't baseball. But I think there needs to be more of a conversation of having more independent, you can call them independent contractors or independent workers. Because you're right, I think that the collaboration is ultimately going to help the player. And sometimes there can be conflicts on what maybe certain personnel in the organization could feel compared to someone that's their sole job is focused on just the physical therapy of the specific, you know, part of your body and doesn't have to look at the baseball side of it too. And then that's where that other part of the business comes in. Where, and even from the, not just talking about a physical side of it, it's even the mental hurdles that you get through. And that's why I think with an independent, that was something that I think you can relate to. You mentioned earlier when we talked, people showing up and not having their best days, right? And I think having to deal with so much of that, that is, those are hurdles that sometimes I think might not necessarily be fully met in the team setting, if that makes sense.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Even if you look at it from a dollars and cents standpoint, if I'm running a business, Ryan Ripken healthy and contributing at the big league level is so valuable. Why are teams, and let me get your take on this, why are teams not investing to have a therapist that is just working with Ryan Ripken? He is worth so much more to me as a big leaguer than he is as a media mogul, you know, as a 28-year-old, right? I'd rather have this guy in a jersey playing. Why are teams not investing in either the talent or the manpower to get these guys back to where they need to be?
You know, I think, and maybe it was just kind of, this even goes back further when, you know, my dad was playing decades ago. There was just, maybe it was putting more on the staff that they already had, and that would be good enough. And again, then it'd go to, well, how much effort is the player going to put into it, right? That's the other argument of, well, if it's your body, you know, how much effort are you going to put into it? But you're right. I think the bigger part initially was it just puts more stress on the, really, to me, was more of not having enough people and staff to do that. And it's definitely happened more and more. Like a lot of my former teammates now, and the Orioles have started to do that for, you know, even before new front office, you know, with Mike Elias coming in, they were starting to change that then. But even now, I remember guys I talked to last year, and they were raving about a physical therapist that the Orioles hired that solely is there to focus on the rehab guys, and like specifically, and would have the different plans that were put out. Now, having said that, though, being hired by the team, I still think there's always going to be that connection where, as you know, with athletes, there are going to be athletes that might have a better connection with you because of your business. And I think that that's completely fine. I think that's where, if I was going to say one thing about your product or interest, I think just the collaboration of being open to what is best for the player and what is, and how much is, if the player is going to be that committed to get himself right, I think that everyone should try to be on board. But then there's the whole like legal side of it as well. As I get, if you get hurt playing for the team, then they have to cover, you know, the expenses, and they have to choose. But that is a constant debate of what do you do? And do you have the right people in place to help get the player exactly where they want to go?
You know who figured it out? The NFL figured it out only for concussions. It's really crazy. By the way, it took a major motion picture and a tremendous amount of lawsuits to get this outside body and said, they are going to evaluate our concussions because we can't trust our team docs to do it, because they're just going to put these guys back on the field and the player's going to want to get back on the field and everyone loses. It just took such a groundswell. I would love to see professional sports go the way of anything musculoskeletal, any injury, we're going to have individually assessed by an expert outside the team whose paycheck does not have the team at the bottom of it, who is just there to assess, is this player ready? How do we get this player ready, et cetera? So if you know anyone buying the Baltimore Orioles, just make sure that that's a piece of their plan. Thank you.
Yeah, I see what you did there. I mean, I think, like I said, you know, there are so many things that have – so many strides that have been made, but you're right. Yeah. I think even for people's peace of mind, and that's not – I know this isn't – this is no knock to anybody, but I know that always goes through sometimes of – what I've heard with other players, again, this isn't me, just knowing with other players of, is the team always, you know, wanting the best for me? And there's certain cases where players think they know best, and that's a whole other different issue at times where they go, well, this is what I should do. It's like, well, people have this experience. You should listen and trust them. But especially if you're in a predicament, you know, how much there's been a lot of guys that have kind of wondered that, you know, and I think always when you're able to separate when it comes to health and or, you know, rehab with things like that, I think everyone then can take a step back and see it's not in your own narrative. The concussion part of it is very fascinating because, again, how do you protect players and teams from themselves or their own self-interest? Take someone else out, because then it's no longer, and then the team or the player doesn't have to be the bad guy either. It's just, hey, this is what I think it should be. I'm sorry, you're concussed. I can't sign off on this. And as a player, so many people that I've even talked to, you know, in the moment or even after it, you just want to get back to play. You just want to get out there. And for the team, they might be, if it's a valuable member of the team, of course they would want to, but in the back of their mind, like, man, it would be, it could be a really big loss if he's not out there. So it's that, again, like you brought it up, the self-interest part, it definitely puts teams more in a tight position.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was just having a conversation this morning with someone in the NFL who said that at the end of the year, the organization gets together and has a meeting, and the agenda is every single player's name goes up on a board, and the people in that room are the physical therapist, the doctor, the general manager, the head coach, and they all talk about their take on the player. If I'm a player and I hear that that meeting is taking place, there's no way in hell I am ever talking to my physical therapist in the training room, right? It's crazy. That's crazy. I'd be terrified that, you know, I'd be terrified that that doctor went into my knee with a camera, took pictures, and they're going to tell the GM what's inside of my knee. That is very scary and a tremendous conflict of interest. Maybe one day it will change because they did with concussions. Who knows what we get there. Okay, let's move a little bit to your professional world outside of your sports world. I read a bunch of interviews of Ryan Ripken when you were done with the Orioles. And when you retired, you just kept saying, I can't wait to see what's next, or I'm ready to take this next step. Did you know that you were headed towards media? And if so, what surprised you so much about this media world?
You know, you want to play as long as you can. And I was realizing that the opportunities were dwindling, and I didn't want to go, you know, extend my career and you know, off this different path. So I decided I wanted to move on. I did always think I wanted to be involved with media, but to be honest, I didn't know what the heck that would look like. You know, that's what I'm saying. I'm excited about what's going to happen next, but I'll be honest too, kind of terrifying. You're anxious. It's stressful, but it's been a fun process because you learn a lot about, you know, a world that you might not know a lot about. Now, I've grown up being around cameras, being interviewed, and of course I can be better on camera and be able to talk and articulate points, but I had a little bit of an understanding there. But then the radio side's different. You know, trying to teach the game on TV is different. Just trying to have conversations, whatever it may be, was very different. But one thing I always wanted to make sure whenever I got into the media was, how could I try to be as authentic as possible, specifically with what I'm talking about? And in this case, what I found that I want to do, and eventually I want to branch out outside of baseball more, and I've done that this offseason, talking about football, having more objective, realistic conversations, but conversations like this, where you can try to give more insight for those that might really value the information. So for me, what I'm excited about coming up is, especially for baseball players, you know, how can I learn from what I went through to try then to explain it to an audience to understand at different levels, you know? And also, I think we're talking about the physical side as far as with therapy and your body, but even also mentioning the mental side of it, because I think that's a part of athletes and a lot of people out there that it gets overlooked. Now it's getting looked at more and more nowadays, but it's definitely a problem. And personally, I feel like as a duty for me, it's like, that's what I want people to help with, because that was something that absolutely derailed me at times in my career. I'm trying to avoid that in this new career.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's such a nuanced look. One of the things that correlates beautifully to what it is I do for a living is I do a lot of interviewing, not on the podcast, but for future employees. And I try to get as much of a sense of the truth out of the employees. You interview people all day. How would you recommend getting truth out of your subject?
Hey guys, quick pause and a quick shout out to this new masterclass that we just launched here at True Sports Physical Therapy. Myself and Dr. Tim Stone put together a masterclass of ACL rehab, and we call it From Table to turf. And the reason we call it that is because it's going to teach you exactly how to get your athlete all the way from post-op day one with the nitty-gritty of regaining all of that range of motion, with the tips and the tricks that we use here at True Sports Physiotherapy that gets our athletes better, faster, and stronger. And that's early. And then how do you progress that athlete all the way onto the field with a ball in their foot or a stick in their hand or whatever their sport is, and teach them how to accelerate, how to decel, how to change direction, and all the mechanics that go in there. What drills do we use to get our athletes exactly where they need to be, back on the field and even better than before injury? And I want you to sign up for that class. Now, you can find it on our website. You can shoot us a direct message and just say, hey, send me the course. It's right now on sale, so make sure you sign up now. It is fully accredited to get you all of your continuing education hours. Sign up for the True Sports Masterclass ACL from table to turf. Thanks, guys.
I think what I try to do, one, they got to feel comfortable in their surroundings. Everyone has to feel like this isn't a interview, you know, gotcha moment type of situation. Just want you to be honest, organic, but that as an interviewer, you have, that's your responsibility to make them feel comfortable. So for me, how I always try to is I will relate things personally. I will be open about myself and showing that I have nothing to hide, and I'm willing to put myself out there and put in a situation. I think a lot of, especially I know in the player side, that's a lot of guys I've talked with, they always are on guard because they're afraid about saying the wrong thing. But there are so many parts what I want to try to get out of the players or people that I do is, even if you don't do the same thing as, you know, for instance, you know, I play with a lot of guys in the minor leagues, and like Cedric Mullins is a guy, you know, and actually going to do some things with Cedric upcoming. And Cedric, talking to him on the side of it, he has so many experiences that if you never played baseball, you would find interest. That's what I want to try to get out. Like, that's the focus, because people might like the what he looks for as a hitter, and you know, how he adjusted as a left-handed hitter. That, like, that's great, right? The other part of it is, you know, the adversity side of it. What have you gone through? And the more personal I think you get with guys, the better answers you can get. But that's the trick of the trade, so to speak, that you got to kind of figure out.
Well, I think that's great advice. I think the way I would utilize that advice is when I go to interview a potential employer, an applicant, I might talk about some of my own struggles professionally and then ask them for theirs, as opposed to just saying, hey, what are you bad at? Or what do you need to get better at, right? Because they might look at the interviewer as, this person is infallible. I don't want to mention something that I struggle with. So maybe there's some really good there. You mentioned your ability to take these complex subjects, like the nuances of being at the plate, identifying a breaking ball versus a fastball, maybe some of the nitpicky things that you do in the batter's box to tip you off, hey, I'm going to go this way with my swing or whatever. How do you make something so complex, so simple and digestible to the common fan or listener?
So, and that's the that's a constant challenge, right?
Yeah,
but
sure.
I always look at this because I would sit down with my dad. And if anyone's spent time with the Ripken family, I'm sorry. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, I will say. But I can sit down and we'll talk, and it sometimes feels or sounds like a different language if you listen, because how it's broken down, my dad and I can get so technical. And sometimes if we're out in public and someone else is listening, I'll have to say, hey, you know, we got to speak English here. Because what might make sense on this advanced level is not going to make sense to somebody else. So that's where I try to look at, how do you, I think this is something in baseball reference, and it's probably with everything in life, but baseball and hitting, it's already hard enough, but how do you simplify your thoughts? So we start there. It's how do you simplify what you're trying to do? So as a game plan for a hitter, what are you thinking? What is your one thought? And then you kind of go from there. And that's where I think if you're able to simplify a complex thought, then you can add on little pieces as you go, but you can't go from point A to point Z just like that. And I think that's the part with hitting, because you're right. Hitting in general, it's so complex, and the speeds and what you're looking for, and every hitter has different ticks. of what they're yep. of what makes them work. I think that's a part where explaining that. So I just try to do it. My job is, how can I just simplify the answer? And if I can simplify the concept, then hopefully I'm doing my job for the audience to understand.
Have you found that that has gotten a lot easier with repetition as you've gone through all these interviews, as you've tried to do it over and over?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and sometimes they go better than some, but you learn kind of who you work with and who you deal with and how they interact too, right? It's kind of the beauty in media, I guess, in with life in general. People are different. You work yeah. with different clients every single day. And even though you might have a system that works for, I don't know, these three people, it might not work for this person to connect, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever it may be, right? You need to try to break through. So yeah. I think that's a part where I've gotten used to more of how does each, you know, person I'm going to interview, how are they as an individual first? That's where I've definitely, I think, gotten better of reading how that is, because the biggest mistake I guess I could make is thinking that everyone's going to be the same. Yep. And as we know, that ain't going to cut it. Same thing if you're trying to treat someone for a slightly different injury and do the same thing, you're not going to get the result you want.
Yeah, and by the way, even the same injury, because what resonated with me in that explanation from you is when I come up with the diagnosis for a given athlete and I walk over to the skeleton every single time and I always say, hey, I'm going to explain this to you as if you know nothing. Here's your humerus, your arm bone. Here's your femur, your thigh bone. Here's the way they work. Here's the way they fit into the socket and the glenoid and the acetabulum. Now that spiel, I like to keep it concise to about 4 minutes, but that spiel is different for every single patient. And it's because during my diagnostic, I have said, okay, this is Ryan Ripken. He played this amount of baseball. We just talked about this. He knows a little bit about the rehab process. He spent this amount of time in athletic training room. It's going to color my spiel so that I can try to put it where you are, versus I've rehabbed a tremendous amount of orthopedic surgeons. Dude, they know the body more than me. Yeah. I'm not gonna pretend like I'm them, but I'm also not gonna talk to them like they are Ryan Ripken, no offense. So it's just gonna be a different presentation, and it's really all about reading the room. And what's great about what you do is you can go back and listen to, here's how I did with this interview with Nick Moore, the football player, versus whoever who's playing shortstop. How are they different? How are they the same? What I would encourage clinicians that are listening to this podcast is have someone shadow you, have them give you feedback. It looked like he gained this. It looked like he didn't really understand what you were talking about with that. How can you color it for the next time and build that Rolodex? So the next time you see an orthopedic surgeon, here's how you're going to talk to them, et cetera. And just constantly working on your craft. How often do you listen to your interviews?
Every single time. You know, I go back almost to, I have to get to a point now of telling myself to stop, because I would go back initially and keep listening over and over again and go, well, Ryan, that's not being completely productive, because you got to move on to do whatever else I have to do. But that's how particular I am with my craft. And in general, I think, you know, if I finish the show and the next day I'm driving, I'm going to listen to it over and over again. I'll even watch my facial expressions as well to see, and then watch their facial expressions to see like, okay, did I miss on something? And even in the moment too, you can have that feeling of what something rolls off well or what doesn't. But you're right. I think when you're able to take a step back, and the one thing I always asked after whoever I interviewed is, you know, I like your concept of saying someone to shadow. I think that that's great. I also love to ask, all right, tell me how that was, you know, and it doesn't have to be right after. I'd rather do it a day or two later, you know, you know, you brought up Nick Moore and Gavin Sheets, and friends with both of them. I've done interviews with both of them, and I'll
ask Ryan, for the record, I did not bring up Gavin Sheets, but I'm happy to talk about Gavin Sheets.
Oh gosh, well, we don't have to talk about Gavin Sheets.
We don't have time.
We don't have enough time to talk about him, because he's a whole other problem in itself. Just kidding. He's one of my best friends. But, you know, I could sit there and talk to them after, right after or 2 days later, because different thoughts can come about even for the person that you were with. So, I just think it's so valuable. Some people hate listening to themselves talk. I don't like hearing myself talk. I think I sound like a goofball half the time. But yeah. There's a value to go back, and there's an extreme value to hear of what other people are perceiving that you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's like watching film, right? Like, how often did you watch clips of the way you were swinging, the way you were approaching, and then changing it? By the way, you know who was the sultan of changing their approach? Was Cal Ripken Jr. I mean, how many batting stances, right? Too much. So you got to be careful that you don't go too much, but you better believe he was watching clips and clips and clips and figuring out, how do I change? How do I adjust? Because if you stay the same, the game is going to pass you by. The profession is going to pass you by. So there's a lot there. It's uncanny how similar entrepreneurship is to playing the sport. And that's why I love having these conversations. There's so much to gain.
Yeah. And one thing I want to say about my dad's stances, which people, you know, for him, and that's part of also going through an uncomfortable period, it was recognizing that something wasn't working, but you have to try to find it out, figure it out. As a professional athlete, you know, it's, well, oh, things aren't going well. Well, too bad. You have to fix it because your job is on the line. So for him, he would go off of what felt right. And he was willing to take the risk to change in order to hopefully have success again. And that's why he changed so many times when people were going, oh, why is your bat just hanging down like there? Are you doing the violin or whatever it may be? He goes, well, you know what? It might look weird to you, but I was trying something because I needed to have something work for me to go out and play. And I look at that now. I think everyone is afraid to fail and is afraid to do something different because you might not feel good initially, but that's a part of that uncomfortable feeling. And that was something now that I'm done with baseball, and where you fail all the time, you have to be willing to take the chances, because you never know what one of your 100 ideas might be the one that sets you on a path that puts you in a great position.
Dude, I can envision that violin so clearly.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And I even tell him, like, that was one of the stupidest things. And he goes, well, you could say it's stupid. I hit bombs with that. I'm like, well, you know what? I can't argue that with you.
He hit a lot of bombs. I've seen you celebrate some unbelievable successes in your early media career. I think you just hit 5,000 subscribers on YouTube, and that was way ahead of where you kind of predicted. What's the biggest mistake you made having been in this career for the last year?
You know, the biggest mistake I made was worrying so much about the beginning processes of just, you know, putting myself out there. I would sit there and feel like I had to overdo take after take after take because I thought that I would be at this, you know, my product should already be incredible, you know? And I think that was the part. I remember talking with 105.7 The Fan, who I currently do work with, and we're going to do pregame shows with them on this upcoming season, is when they said, Ryan, we really like you. We think you have a lot of, you know, ability to make this a career in this field if you want, but, you know, you're going to have to get the reps and you're going to have to, you know, continue to figure it out. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, why, you know, I'm confident. I feel like I could already go out and do it. And I know a lot of people in general, when they critique quote unquote analysts or people on air of, I can do that. You know, you have that type of sensation, but seeing where I was when I started to now, it's night and day. And I think that was my biggest mistake initially when I was doing my own work, was constantly trying to be perfect when the reality is you're not. And it's going to be different on day one than it is on day 95. And I think that was once I let go of that, of going, all right, that wasn't maybe my best take the points away and move on. But if you try to perfect every single thing so much, then it's going to kind of stunt your growth. And the best way is trial and error. Worst mistake was trying to be too perfect to start. The best thing I've done is to say, you know what? Trial and error, and that's the best way you're going to find out.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely saw that when I started my own practice. Was I was so worried about what's the patient going to think that I don't have a receptionist? What's the patient going to think that I ran out of massage cream or whatever crap I was worried about? It doesn't matter. You just got to get started, and once you get started, then you can continue to iterate and reiterate and get better. I think that's a great lesson. Okay. Let's conclude, Ryan Ripken, with our Eric Cressy lightning round. You ready?
Let's do it.
Quick answers, please. Don't repeat my question. I find a lot of guests repeat the question, and and weight, but you're a pro. Here we go. Who's the best athlete to ever come out of the Gilman School?
Wow. A healthy Darius Jennings.
Good answer. That's a good freaking answer. I would have gone with Duncan Hutchins, but Darius Jennings is not a bad answer.
Oh, Dutch is fantastic, by the way, too. It was
at everything
as well. Everything, all around athlete.
It's crazy. I remember rehabbing his low back surgery. He might have been one of the first lacrosse athletes I worked with. And the first thing we did for rotation was I wanted him to just get out and throw a football to me. The cannon on that guy, dude, as a lacrosse player and a basketball player, he had a rifle. He's just good at everything. Okay, next. Who is the absolute best podcast host?
I stick with sports. So I do like Ryan Russillo talking about sports. And as far as interview-wise, and even though people are controversial with how they feel about Pat McAfee, I really like it because of what he gets out of the athletes, of who he talks to. He had Tom Brady on the other day. And for me, I loved hearing the openness of what Tom talked about. So I would say those two for me, I've really kind of locked in on recently.
Where are you on Jim Rome?
Jim Rome, I go back and forth. Jim Rome's interesting because I love the evolution of what he's done and what he has. I actually forgot about him. I you know what? Thinking about it, I'd throw Jim in there too. He's really good. And you know what? He's authentic with who he is. I think that is the biggest part that I appreciate with Jim Rome. He is as authentic as it comes in that industry.
Yeah. Okay. Good listens. Okay. The biggest influence on your career, not named Calvin Edwin Ripken.
Playing wise, Tim Raines Jr. when I played was probably, and for life, I think this was a big message for me. I was in short season after I got released, my first season back from our first season with the Orioles when I got released by the Nationals. My swing was terrible. Talking about trying to find stances felt terrible. And we had different people trying to tell me what I should do. And all of a sudden, game in June or end of June, he goes, Ryan, I don't care what, we're not going to worry about your swing at all. I want you to focus on your mindset. I want you to have a plan every time. And if you have a plan and you get out, who cares? I want you to have a plan. But he goes, if you don't have a plan or you're 50% on your plan, I'm going to be mad at you. So from that moment on, I made sure I had a plan every single time. And I remember the first time he told me, he goes, your mind is more powerful. And if your mind can think it, your body, you'll be surprised of what you can accomplish. And I felt the worst I ever did physically, trying mechanically, but it was the most mentally sharp I ever was. And I think I hit 287 or something like that. It was the highest I hit in professional baseball. And so that is a mindset that I look of going, man, Tim Raines Jr. is that just blew my mind and it really connected with me.
You take the same approach to your business?
Yes. I take the exact same approach now of going, even when as soon as I have a physical doubt or, you know, thought, I go, you know what, go back to making it simple, go to your plan. And it's really go to your plan, go to your plan. And if you execute your plan, but it's not what you want, I tell people, I'd rather be 100% right, is what he told me, than be, either be 100% right or be 100% wrong. Don't be in the middle.
Love it. Love it. Okay. The best late 90s Oriole you ever met?
I spent a lot of time with them. One, Brady Anderson was always interesting to me, you know, just because I knew him from such a young age. And now probably the one that comes full circle where it's like, wow, how is this happening? Mike Bordick. Mike Bordick is one of the nicest guys you were ever going to interact with. And now I went from seeing him in the locker room to now working with him on 105.7. So just a completely full circle moment.
And he is great. And someone I would add to that list, although I'm not trying to answer my own question. How about the Otter, dude? Greg Olson is a pleasure.
He is.
That guy's a gem.
He is a gem is a great way to describe Greg.
He really is.
Those 90s team, the era had so many tremendous guys, characters, but tremendous guys to talk with.
How much time do you spend with Ben McDonald these days?
I haven't seen Ben as much recently, but talk about a guy that is genuine, who he is. Ben is, even on air, of talking about with in the baseball world, play by or being a color guy. Yeah. He's one of my favorite to listen to because he's just, he is who he is. And hit the stories about Ben too, that I've heard even from others, crack me up every single time.
He is, he's great in the booth. And I think you're onto something with just being genuine. Like I could listen to Jim Palmer be Jim Palmer for days. I could listen to Ben McDonald being Ben McDonald for days. Same thing with Ryan Ripken. And it seems like the theme is they're just being themselves. And I love that. And the nuance that they bring to every single game is a pleasure to listen to. Much like this interview with you, Ryan Ripken, thank you so much for your time. Tell us and the thousands of sports physical therapists listening to this where we can find you and get outstanding insight on sport.
Well, so I'm on YouTube. It's just at Ryan Ripken Media, and I'm going to have more different evolutions of what it is. I do a Ryan Ripken show Mondays and Thursdays. If you're just looking for specific Orioles content, I do a podcast called Rippin' Rock with Rocco DeSangro, who's my co-host with it. He works for Fox 45 here in Baltimore as a sports anchor. So if you just want Orioles coverage, we'll do that. If you're looking for everything else, check out the YouTube channel. And then at Ryan Ripken on the social media. If you have a question, that's the thing. If you want to talk sports or just life, give me a follow, shoot me a question. Would love to interact.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, thank you for your time. Thank you for all the knowledge you've given to all these sports PTs. Really appreciate you. Can't wait to see where you go from here, man.
Appreciate having me on. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast. Thank you for your support. We really appreciate it. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, wherever it is you consume your pods. We are there. Please give us a listen. Share it with your friends. Share it with your colleagues. Leave us a 5-star review. And as always, give us a follow on Instagram, on TikTok, where we are posting constantly, daily content on how to be an outstanding sports physical therapist. We appreciate you guys. We can't wait to hear from you.